I'd like to introduce our speaker today, Mr. Steve Ikuda, who is from Intermountain Healthcare. He is their Emergency Preparedness Program Manager, and he's going to talk to us today about, guess what, disaster preparedness. And he does have to leave at 10 to 1, so we just need to be mindful of his time and let him rip, as the saying goes.
Very good. Thank you, Anne. Thank you very much for inviting me. My one of my colleagues at work is one of your parish members, Gay Cunningham, and so she asked me to speak in regards to emergency preparedness. And so one thing about emergency preparedness is that you got to have a passion for it. And for me, that's right up my alley just because of my experience. Background. I've spent 30 years in healthcare and 7 years in the corporate world, 6 years as a Fleet Marine Corpsman in the Navy, served with the Marines. And so with all this experience, I've come to not like emergency preparedness, but I love it. It's my passion. And so one of my legacies that I will leave Intermountain Healthcare is the emergency management program that is established at Dixie Regional Medical Center, as well as I oversee Garfield Memorial Hospital up in Panguitch and Valley View Medical Center up in Cedar City. And so I have key contacts at those other two facilities, but my home base is here at Dixie Regional. And so as I was thinking about what kind of topic I wanted to present to you and some preparedness, I'm going to talk to you about the 12 myths of emergency preparedness, all right? And I like to have this interactive, and so as I present these myths, I'm going to ask you for your response. Do you think it's right, or you think, you know, and we'll see how it plays out. And then after that, I've got, as you know, New York, the eastern seaboard was hit with Superstorm Sandy. Actually, it was a hurricane, and then it turned into a superstorm. There are lessons learned from that from those that were affected by it. And if I have time left over, I'll show some FEMA numbers as to what kind of responses they had and where they are at. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask them during the presentations, and we'll keep it on time here. So disaster dozen, 12 minutes of disaster preparedness. If something happens, all I have to do is call 911.
No.
Very good. I like this crowd already. Gay has taught you. Help can only go so far or be there so quickly, right? So, here in the United States, we're very much a 911 society. If something happens, we call 911, which is good. We have a really good, robust system, but when it's under stress, that robust system will start to see gaps in it. For example, our 911 communication center here in St. George, they can only handle so many calls simultaneously, and then their backup is actually Cedar City. Okay? How many ambulances do you think we have total here in Washington County between like Hurricane City, Ivins, Washington, Dixie Ambulance?
How many vehicles?
Yeah, ambulances. Yeah.
20.
That's about a good number. Okay, so about 20, 25. All right. So what's the biggest hazard we are at risk for here in Washington County or even in the state of Utah?
Earthquake.
Very good. That was brought to light last year when the state of Utah, which, by the way, you should pat yourself on the back. Utah was the very first state per capita that, for our first-year attendance in the Great Shakeout, we beat everyone else. We beat California and the other 13 states and the countries that have participated. It's outstanding. We had over 33% of the state's population registered. California, its first year, had just under 20%. So earthquake, okay? Where is the closest earthquake fault line here in Washington County? Very good.
Under Washington City Hall, actually.
Yeah? So, you guys know. So, you know some of your history, right? So, when we do what we call a hazard vulnerability analysis every year for our hospital, we have to take into account what has happened in the past, what has happened recently, not only just for the hospital, from a county, as well as a county perspective, right? We're in a very unique situation here in Washington County as Dixie Regional Medical Center. We are the only tertiary healthcare hospital. We're the only level 3 trauma center. All right? You're going to have to go to Vegas from the next trauma center or up to Urban South where we have Utah Valley Regional Medical Center where there's another trauma center. Yes, sir.
As one seismologist said to the other, it's all your fault.
There you go. Okay. So, it doesn't take much for us to have a catastrophic earthquake. Okay. We have forecasting models that show that Washington County will sustain a 7.0 magnitude earthquake. What kind of damage it would sustain to buildings, infrastructure. And those of us that are in emergency management, we call it disaster math. If there's a catastrophic event, we will project that there will be at least 7% of the population that would have some type of injury that would need hospitalization. Okay? 7%. So for us here in Washington County, that's roughly about 9,000 people that if they were not to receive immediate attention, they would succumb to their injuries. Now, that doesn't include your walking wounded, those that have, they're able to walk, okay? Our hospital is only capable of surging up to just under 300 patients. We currently have a 245-bed capacity. The state requires us to surge 20%. Up to, that takes just under 300 people. So when you look at the math of 300 versus 9,000, we're already in that overwhelmed state, right? And so going back to the 911, this is where we really talk about resilient communities, your neighborhoods, your neighbors, your church, okay? There's going to be a time where you're going to be on your own. Superstorm Sandy is a great example, all right? It took New York 14 days to get power back restored to 95% of their folks. So if you can imagine being without electricity for 14 days. Okay. Yep. Security, like charity, begins at home, and you're responsible for your family's safety rests on your shoulders. Okay? Because resources are very strapped. They're going to go to where it's going to do the greatest good for the greatest number. All right. So, it's not much to say that families shouldn't call for help but when it's truly needed, but it's to remind them that you may be on your own for a while, okay? And we're going to talk about the 72-hour kit survival thing. And based on the most recent events, that's going to probably change. Okay? Myth number two, all I need is a 72-hour kit with a flashlight, first aid kit, some food, water, and a radio. Okay, so we got a note here.
Not given what happened with Sandy.
Okay, Sandy, Katrina, we've had some major natural disasters that have it's got FEMA's attention to how do we look at our storage, you know. The turn of the century, it was a big push for at-home storage for months, okay? But what happens if you had to be, if you were displaced from your home? You're not able to take those bulky, heavy food equipment, and so you need to be able to have it portable, but enough to where you're able to be relocated. Not really sure where that figure came from, but obviously it's very minimal. In hospitals, you know, especially after the Joplin, Missouri earthquake or EF5 tornado that took place 2 years ago, they went through their 72-hour cache in about 4 hours just because that seven-story building got a direct hit from the tornado. It actually moved that entire foundation 4 feet. Because it took the rooftop off where the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system up on the penthouse and created such negative pressure that it blew all the windows inward. The door hinges, the doors came off its hinges. And like I said, it just imploded and just basically there was such negative pressure inside, it actually moved that entire building. So what we suggest is a goal to be self-sufficient for at least 2 weeks. Okay. Why 2 weeks? Katrina showed many stories that there are long periods of recovery, response to be able to get in. Because if we were to have an earthquake here, Which town would be isolated when the bridges collapse here in Washington County? Hurricane would be one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Lubbercan?
Definitely.
The what?
Bloomington.
Okay. So when you have your infrastructure collapse, I mean, you're not able to get supplies in via truck, okay? The other only other way is from the air dropping the supplies, all right? It has to be that big to where we actually then have the federal folks take part. But every disaster event starts locally and it ends locally, right? Okay. Okay, so there will also be a biological scenario which may cause a two-week quarantine. What type of incident would that take place? What kind of biological event?
Oh, my gosh, if your water system and your sewer system are disrupted, mm-hmm. it can be contaminated or you could have none.
Right.
And that can be, you could have cholera and dysentery and typhoid in no time.
Right, so public health would issue a water boil effect, okay? What temperature does water have to be when you boil it?
212.
So, a lot of things are misleading. So, for example, at the hospital, what would that affect? It would affect our water fountains,
yep.
our coffee makers, right? Those reverse osmosis hot cold water, because they only deliver 190 degree water when it's heated. All right. The soda machines would be out. Boy, would that hurt a lot of our younger folks. I work very closely with our public health department. Our public health medical director, Dr. Blodgett, he's very concerned about not only our county, okay, because we're in a very unique situation. We're in the southwest corner of the state, right? So if you were to travel 2 hours south, where would you end up being?
Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. And if you were to drive 4 hours north?
Salt Lake.
So if Salt Lake had a catastrophic event like an earthquake?
They're coming here.
Mm-hmm. If Las Vegas had an incident, their biggest thing is a terrorist attack. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we call them twos, T-O-O, targets of opportunity. Mm-hmm. Biggest concern for that would be a biological terrorist event, like a black plague. Okay. Clark County's emergency disaster plan calls for if Las Vegas had to evacuate, they either go north or they go south. If they were to go 2 hours south of Vegas, they're still going to be in the desert, right? Okay. The next closest city would be what? Barstow. Okay. Where are the closest tertiary hospital within a 2 hour drive?
Mm-hmm. They're coming here.
Mm-hmm. It's the locals.
That's when we blow up the bridge down there.
Yeah.
Or we water the big boulder that falls down.
Yeah, that works. That's why we have the gorge.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, we can guard that pretty good.
That's right. So, this is a real concern. So, we're not just focusing just what happens in Washington County, but our neighbors to the north and our neighbors to the south. Okay, we're a very progressive healthcare community with our hospital, with our health department, and our public safety. Avoid the one-size-fits-all simpleton list and really customize it to your family's unique needs. Okay, your medications are very important. That's one big thing that those folks back on the East Coast was, how did they get their prescriptions refilled? Okay, some didn't. All right. So if you have those where you actually have your 30-day, 60-day, 90-day, have that available. Okay, because especially when you're out of your medication, your body starts to not act normal. And then if you're exposed to the elements because you're now displaced from your home, it just makes it a little bit more difficult. Okay, myth number three.
Forget that.
My insurance policy will take care of everything.
Nope. They got their own problems.
Very good. So your SWAT team's insurance agents aren't going to instantly rebuild your life like on TV. So right after Hurricane Sandy came, they started to have all these claims. They started denying them because they didn't have flood insurance.
Yeah.
But it wasn't due to the hurricane. Okay, it actually became a storm. So a lot of those insurance companies tried to get out of those coverages, those claims. So again, someone just said, they're going to be far more concerned about their own bottom line than yours.
Yep.
Okay.
So you call Siegfried and Jensen.
Oh, there you go.
I probably already did.
Robert DeBry. Okay, so right now, some of these insurance companies are rewriting their policies to redefine some rather common terrorism or disaster-related incidences as being excluded and not coverable. Okay, I mean, here's the key word. They're actually implementing the thing about terrorism. Okay? Mm-hmm. We all... Your generation, mine, we all remember the hijackings of the 70s. You know, that was a big thing. You know, terror seemed to be a common denominator in our, as human beings. There's always something that is always going on. And so we're in a different world. Healthcare and emergency preparedness was not said in the same sentence 7 years ago. It's a whole different ballgame now for healthcare workers. You know, healthcare facilities. And it's not to get you scared, but we actually go through the same type of training through FEMA, through Homeland Security, all the way from an anthrax attack to a bioterrorist attack to a terrorist attack. Okay, because we're what we call a soft target. Okay, we don't have the hardened concrete bunkers, the high security of you going in. We still make it very open and welcome. And so terrorists, what they do is they don't want something that's real big. All they have to do is take something that's small in its vent and strike the vulnerable populations. Okay, that's the definition of terrorism. So for us in healthcare, we work very closely with Homeland Security. You know, ever since I got into this profession, my top 10 speed dial numbers does not include my wife. She dropped off. She's like number 20. And she knows that. And so she's very well prepared. She knows that if there's an event in the county or at the hospital, she will see me after we are past the response phase and the recovery phase. Okay? My top 10 is all the way from the CDC to FBI to Homeland Security to our public safety to our counterterrorism group out of Nevada, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a whole different, like I said, mindset. Myth number 4, good preparedness is too expensive and complicated.
No.
Okay, it's manageable. Mm-hmm. All right? Nothing can be further from the truth. The problem is we haven't made preparedness part of our overall education. And that's something that educators really need to take a look at. In healthcare, like I was mentioning, at the Utah University, their nursing program actually now has a chapter of emergency preparedness, which includes decontamination of victims, how to take care of social distancing. And so they actually come in and actually do drills as part of their nursing curriculum. We get more preparedness information on air and flight than we get as citizens, right? Oxygen mask, exits, that type thing. That's one of those things. It's an emergency preparedness.
Flotation device.
Mm-hmm. Most citizens aren't taught that there are literally thousands of subtle, simple, and economic things that you can do to drastically improve your own readiness. Okay. Good preparedness is too expensive. The notion that might be expensive or complicated has come from companies that really want to take advantage of you. Okay, there are some standard survival kits that you can get, but you can actually make them from your own. You go to Walmart, you can go to any of the other stores that offer those and put it together. Okay, they're in the business to make money. So, yes, sir.
It seems that more currently the word preparedness, in as far as the government is concerned, is considered to be a dirty word, in that if you have a certain amount of things stored for your own preparedness, there are elements in the government who feel that you're hoarding or doing various things. So apparently the better choice they're using now is the word self-sufficiency.
Yes.
You can be self-sufficient but not attract anyone's attention.
Yep. Just a different word for the same bottom line. You do have to be self-sufficient. Okay. So we talk about hoarding. Remember, so when we had the H1N1 pandemic back in 2009, I knew it's one of those you remember where you were when it was announced. And we were actually at the state healthcare summit up in Layton at the convention center, where the state medical public health director actually came in and actually stopped one of the keynote speakers, came up and announced that there was, back at the time, they referred it to swine flu. And so subsequent to that, for the next year or so, there was a lot of possibly hoarding of masks, gloves, hand sanitizers, enough to where it had. Our major supplier was 3M. They got so backlogged internationally, worldwide, that we had to go to another source, which was Kimberly-Clark. They couldn't keep up with the demand. Okay, but one thing is that as a buyer, if you're purchasing it, you cannot go over 10% of what your last order or your average order was, because they think you're trying to buy it. And people were trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, healthcare systems were going over and beyond what their normal person, and they stopped that. Number five, we can only form a neighborhood group through FEMA, the Red Cross, or local law enforcement. Okay, very good. Neighbor helping neighbor is one of the highest civic duties. That's called the resilient community, self-sustaining in your neighbors, within your neighborhood. Okay? So, no one can regulate this, and you don't have to get anyone's permission to coordinate your safety with others. Now, if you do decide to have your neighborhood group, and you are aware of a CERT team, is everyone familiar with CERT teams?
Yes. We have it.
Very good.
Yeah,
yep.
I'm a member.
Outstanding. It's good to collaborate with those that may not be in a formal type of group. Working with these groups is rather advantageous, but not required. Okay? So, I've listed a couple groups here that you can be part of. One is the American Red Cross DET, otherwise stands for Disaster Action Teams. These folks are volunteers. Okay, so with me being in the fire department, if we know we're going to a structure fire, we arrive on scene, there's a family displaced, our incident commander will call our local DET team. They will come out and provide that displaced family some lodging, food, et cetera, et cetera. This is a volunteer basis. You can get a hold of your local volunteer coordinator. His name is Paul Dunston. They offer DET team classes down here in Washington County. And some have already been deployed nationally. If you choose to be on the national deployment roster, you would go through the Utah chapter of American Red Cross. And so they've already had a couple of their members actually go back to the East Coast.
Yes, Salvation Army has something like that too, don't they?
I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
It could. I would refer you just to look on Salvation Army on the internet and see if they have any chapters here, response teams. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
During this paper, there's a fire right near us. A trailer burned out.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and well, no, I think it's more recent than that. But anyway, they had two young people, and in the other thing it said there were two young teenagers. And I went over to see what the scoop was. I thought these kids were cleaning up what was left of the thing, and they were looking for their father's ashes and this thing. They said that these kids were just camping out there with a few dogs, and they didn't have any
utilities.
They were sort of like squatters.
Yeah, squatters. Uh-huh. Red Cross came in and took these kids and put them up for about three nights, and I don't know what they did after that, but I saw it in action. I thought that was really quite outstanding.
Yep, I was the one that actually put the call in the Red Cross.
Oh, really? Did you see the kids? They had four dogs.
So the Red Cross has really made a presence here in Washington County for the last 3 years. Before that, we were sort of like the stepchild of the Utah chapter. I mean, Washington County was part of the Utah chapter instead of the sort of like Utah stops at, central Utah, nothing else exists.
Stops at I-70.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're very happy that there's a strong presence here. Margie Woodworth, I don't know if you know her, but she is very proactive American Red Cross director down here. You have your CERT teams, okay? And if you're interested in getting, you'll have to go through the City of St. George. Their email address is cert@sgcity.org for the next available class, okay? You can speak to your other parish members here about their experience of being on the CERT teams, especially in Sun River. If something were to happen, you were isolated down there.
Yep.
We're active.
We're very active.
Yep. But you know, you got a Station 8 down there now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a great asset they have down there. Okay, in a weapons of mass destruction, otherwise known as a WMD terrorist attack, we're all dead anyway.
No. The majority of us are still here.
Okay, WMDs might kill large numbers of people, but that doesn't mean that it would be a widespread destruction guarantee. In fact, for a widespread destruction, a top-grade WMD must be expertly and precisely applied under ideal conditions. That's why Las Vegas, like I said, would be a target of opportunity for what we call a radiological dispersal device. Okay? It doesn't take much. All you have to do is take some radioactive material, mix it with some fertilizer and some diesel fuel, blow it up, and, you know, the media will capture that, oh, there's a small, you know, there was a small explosion, but there was this plume. But when they insert the word radioactive, that's panic. The key.
Panic ensues.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, doesn't mean that WMDs are being ignored or that they're nothing to fear. It's just that mass destruction does not mean total destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The atomic attacks on Japan, mm-hmm. World War II, good example because there were survivors.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. 7, nothing like that could happen here.
Sure could.
The old ostrich, you know, in the sand here. Okay, so even though there are areas, geographic areas that are more prone, okay, tornado alley, hurricanes down in the southwest or southeast, for us, it's our earthquake here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're within that time period of the 750 years historically that shows that we are due for a magnitude of 7.0 or greater.
I've been meaning to ask this. Mm-hmm. A massive earthquake could also cause some of our local volcanoes to erupt.
Yeah.
We have a mess of them around here.
Yes, we do.
In theory.
Oh, yeah,
yep.
We do.
Yep.
And they're usually right on a fault line.
Yep. So, out of the 209 dams that we had here, or we have in the state of Utah, Washington County has 4 of the top 10 dams that would, it's been classified as imminent failure. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of them being Quail Creek. We've already seen that back on New Year's Eve on 1989.
Yeah.
Yes.
After the $14 million of repair, it still leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. San Hollow is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Gunlock is the other one. And then there's a smaller one just off 15 up by Leeds.
What about the one on the East Fork of the Virgin River that they were afraid of 2 years ago?
Oh, that one is the Trees Falls Dam.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was just sloughing off. That could be.
Yeah.
You know. That would create, that's my scenario of a freshwater tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, we don't have tidal waves here. But if you're downstream, if you're Washington Fields, or if you're in Santa Clara,
you're underwater.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, look at that flood they just had out in Santa Clara.
Yeah,
the little dike.
Down the slope.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm still picking the red dirt out of my boots.
We were in Wilmington, too, in that flooding.
Yeah.
7, 8 years ago. Yeah.
Yep. 2005 and 2010.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When there was an earthquake here, this has been several years ago. We had damage, even though it was. There were a lot of areas that had damage, mm-hmm. even though that was a small one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have some really big boulders here, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And they they all rolled down.
That was my wife's. Mine and my wife's friend that got injured.
Oh jeez.
That one just happened?
Yep, last week.
She's all right, though.
Yeah, she's recovering from some injuries. But, you know, you look at those boulders that are in Rockville. You look at the places in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, it doesn't take much for a tremor, a significant tremor, to move those boulders.
It moved it
this
in
is
the
one
last
time
point.
When a guy was not unhappy about his wife moving to his side of the
I already did if he hadn't.
So, you, if you're traveling, you go somewhere, you may end up in the disaster. Okay, and many of you have gone across country, be caught in Tornado Alley, or you're in Florida visiting relatives. Number eight, all I have to worry about is my own family. Yes, but if you're able to care for your own family, the more you can do and should help others. All right. Now, this other PowerPoint of the lessons learned in Superstorm Sandy, there's a little conflict with this, and we'll talk about it. Nine, if preparedness were really important, it would be taught in school.
It's actually true, but...
It is. But...
It isn't.
It isn't because of the amount of time, they don't have enough time to teach everything.
Here it isn't, but in California it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, get
it
under
is
your
taught
desk.
In California.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look and cover.
Right. And, you know, that's the same thing. Your generation, my generation, we grew up in the Cold War.
Duck and cover.
Duck and cover.
Mm-hmm.
Civil defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have bomb shelter in our basement.
Yep. Hearing the sirens.
Yeah.
You know. Number 10, I can get free preparedness information on the internet.
Not totally.
Okay. Some.
You can get some.
There is. Okay. They're more of a rehash of the 72-hour kits. They contain nothing new or comprehensive. You know, as a healthcare facility, I learn from other events that involve healthcare facilities or not. Big thing right now is active shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even though most of them have occurred in non-healthcare facilities, over the last 10 years, Johns Hopkins Hospital has just released a 10-year study showing that from 2000 to 2010, there were just under 200 active shooter incidences that took place in a healthcare facility. All right. So I'm always constantly looking for lessons learned, even though it's not a healthcare facility, because I can bring that and educate our staff. Okay. Some of the free sites have information that could actually cause more problems than they solve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, there's a few places here in town that you can actually go. First Survival Gear, Russ Garrison, he's over in the Albertson Shopping Center. Your Family Still Matters, which is just right across the street from him. Everyone know where Croshaw's Pies are?
No.
So they're right on the corner or within that shopping complex. And then online, there's a place that is in California. They've been there for over 20 plus years. They deal a lot with emergency preparedness because of California, and they have kits that can be for an individual, your family, your work, your car. How many of you actually have a kit at home? How many of you have one in your car? How many of you have one, if those of you that are semi-retired or go to a place of work, have one at work? Okay. So I have all three. Because I'm actually on the road, and I have one at work, and I also have one at home. Okay? At home, my wife has three what we call bug-out places. If she's displaced out of her home, because we have seven kids. Okay? Four rabbits, two dogs, and a Siamese cat. Those are our kids. Yeah? And we have a kennel for each of those. And so she knows exactly how to pack the Camry to fit all of those kennels in there and where she would go. She would go to a park first. Okay? If the park isn't able to accommodate that, she'll actually go to the Snow Canyon softball fields because they actually have fenced-in places, you know. The dog park over by Firehouse Park off of Dixie Downs.
We have
Downs.
A dog park at the Sun River.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes. Didn't list it. Okay. Basically, the best thing is instead of getting some that needs batteries, get some that's a hand crank battery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Some that where you actually generate the energy, stores the energy.
Battery, flashlight, that all I need.
You got radio, and so there's some. These places have some great items that you can actually customize, or you can just get it yourself.
That's what I want to get myself.
Yeah.
Water.
Water. Water. Lots of it.
You got a whole hot water heater.
Full preparedness means I have to get lots of guns and be a survivalist.
No. Just
one
AR-15 will do it.
So while your security and your family safety is utmost, the vast majority of people around you will not be a threat. Okay,
not
there's going to be a few.
But where Sandy was, that's why they couldn't leave their homes.
Yeah. I have that signs sad. That I put in some of my neighbors' yards. This person does not own any guns.
There you go. Looters gave a lot of media attention after Hurricane Katrina. There were more stories of heroism and of people making new friends through shared adversity. So, a balance between your personal and security needs with the desire to help others. 12, if something really bad happens, no one will help.
Not true.
There is no such thing as no one helping.
That's right.
However, for you, it's best that you can do it is to prepare your own family so they need as little outside help as possible. Mm-hmm. There's only going to be two types of populations during the disaster.
Those who are prepared and those who aren't.
Victims and survivors.
Yep.
Okay. So, someone's going to be needier than you, and the more prepared you are, the more you are free to assist those that are going to need help. So, I'm going to take you into this next one here. These are lessons learned from Superstorm Sandy, and these are real lessons. The excitement of a power outage wears off around day 3.
For me, it would be.
Just because your generator runs smooth does not mean it's producing electricity. Okay. A couple of cases of bottled water is not water storage.
No, you need 5 gallon.
1 gallon per day.
Per person.
Per person. Okay. That's your hygiene, your oral intake. Cooking, you should have as much fuel as water. That includes propane, gas, kerosene, firewood, fire starter. Yes?
And the water one is assuming our water supply was damaged and so on. All we had is Virgin River water. What do you have that people could use to purify it so it makes it portable or drinkable?
There are certain filtration systems out there, even that are portable. You can actually, I mean, they've gotten as fancy as an individual 12-ounce, 16-ounce cup that actually has a filter inside of it as you pour the water in and strain it. We have, one thing that I learned 2 years ago is in the city of Boston, they're going through that huge infrastructure downtown. Boston Mass General was affected because one of the contractors severed their main water supply line.
Was that with the big dig, you mean?
Yes, the big dig. Okay, so I was reading about their lessons learned. And they had to keep their chillers going, their boilers going for steam in order to stay operational. What happened was that they worked with the city of Boston to supply water tenders that brought 5,000 gallons of water to the hospital. Well, they couldn't keep up with the demand of their chillers and their heaters, and so their emergency management guy said, let's tap into our rehab pool, which was a 90,000-gallon pool. So they drafted out of that pool. They called the fire department. They came on scene. They started pumping water out of that pool into their central utility plant that provided their HVAC system. Mm-hmm. So then the city supplemented and filled up the pool with their 5,000-gallon tenders.
It's used as a reservoir.
Exactly. So I'm thinking, it's like, because our administrator, Terry Kane, she's always asked our plant operations guy and myself, we need external water tanks. And I said, Terry's not a good idea because we're in an earthquake-prone thing. If we have an earthquake, the tank will fall over. So the light clicked on. We have a rehab pool at the Health and Performance Center that's 45,000 gallons. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So I work with the city. And the city has several backups. So we get our water from Quail Creek. That's power generated. If that power goes out, we actually have aquifers and springs that are gravity fed that come down from Pine Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we have that redundancy. Our chillers, actually, during the summer months, our chillers that provide the air conditioning at the hospital, for example, at River Road Campus, how much water do you think we go through the evaporation process in a day?
Oh my God.
10,000 gallons a day. Okay, we have three campuses.
Yeah.
Okay, and so we need to keep those chillers going, provide the air conditioning so that our operating rooms can still be operational. Okay,
so the rehab pool's about a day and a half supply.
Well, you're going to have the city. You're going to have the city come and rehab.
Yeah.
So, if you're not working, chances are nobody else is working. Don't just sit around. Go out and work. You eat a lot more food when you're cold or bored.
Mm-hmm. Mostly bored.
Yeah? You need more food than you think if your kids are out of school for 2 weeks. Or grandkids. Right?
Or pets.
Kids do not like washing their face in cold water. Well, get over it.
They'll get over it.
Move on.
You may have to tie them down.
Cash is king.
That's right.
Right? I had a great example. So our hospital, before we went to an automatic badge pay where we swipe and it comes out of our checking account, their registers are all electronic, and it's tied to the debit cards. And one of the registers went down. They had to reboot it. And so the other register said, those of you that have cash, come over. I was the only one out of 30 employees that had cash. Mm-hmm. We're very dependent on our plastic.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Some cash, maybe not a lot.
Well, you'd be amazed. My recommendation is at least $500 in small denominations at home. Okay.
Just kept.
You know.
We can do that.
Mm-hmm. You got to save.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to save for a lockbox or something.
72 Honda Civic gets to the grocery store as well as your 2012 Escalade, but the Honda allows more food, more money left over for heat, food, water, generator, etc. Okay? Electrical grid is way more fragile than you think.
Yes, it is.
Those of us who lived in California, the brownouts.
I lived through when I was probably, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14, I lived through that huge brownout throughout New England, New York.
Yes.
And stuff like this in 63, mm-hmm. something like 63.
The t-shirts, where were you when the lights went out,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
It seemed like a few years ago there was a bit of a brush fire out north,
uh-huh.
And it took out a power pole. And it took a while to get power.
Back in Washington County. That was July 9, 2007. How do I know that? I was on my honeymoon on the west side of Jamaica when I got a call saying,
come home.
What do we do? And you do what you're going to do. I'm going to stay here on my honeymoon for the next 7 days. So you're correct. The fire, the wildland fire, took out some main transmission lines up north.
Yeah.
Was a year and a half ago in Arizona, on the west side of Arizona, they were doing some maintenance on a substation that took out the entire San Diego County.
Yeah.
What? Orange County?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Think of foods that are your comfort, your escape. A cup of hot chocolate, glass of milk, ding dong, cognac.
Twinkies.
Can you get ding dongs anymore?
Yeah, okay, get them.
They don't make ding dongs anymore.
Stock up on those two. You'll need comfort after day three.
Yeah. And you'll want it too.
You quickly become the guy in the neighborhood who knows how to wire a generator to the electrical panel, directly wire the furnace to a small generator, or get the well pump running on inverter power.
Definitely want to know them.
A woman who can cook a fine meal by candlelight over a barbecue or open fire is worth her weight in gold. Takes a lot of firewood to keep a fire going all day and into the evening for heat.
Especially when it's 20 degrees out.
In emergency, men stock up on food, women stock up on toilet paper. Not our priorities.
Yep.
Although neighbors can be a great resource, they can also be a huge drain on your emergency storage. So this was something that I was talking about. If you're self-sufficient, you need to be able to set some boundaries. Okay? You need to know how you're going to handle that. It's really easy to be Bob the guy who shares on day three, not so easy on day 11. Just a little reality. Okay? These are some... The what?
That's where the guns come in.
Ah.
Get away from my food.
Give a man a fish, he eats for the day.
Revolution?
Teach a man to fish, and he'll never be hungry again. Now I get it.
Yep.
The old adage. Okay? I was surprised how many things run on electricity.
Yeah. Everything.
You can never have enough matches.
Mm-hmm. Or candles.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All of the expensive clothes in the closet mean nothing if they don't keep you warm. Mm-hmm. The same goes for shoes. Love you, honey. You can't believe the utility companies. They are run by politicians, or so it seems. You know, unfortunately, in my profession, the emergency management director of New York was fired during the response phase. Did anyone read the story about him? So during the debris cleanup, he actually reallocated a debris removal team to remove a tree trunk or a fallen tree in his driveway.
How about the two kids in Connecticut who went out in canoes in the middle of the storm into the Long Island Sound and then called for help?
Yeah.
They got reamed, you know, by the emergency people. You
left them there.
So he was fired on the spot by the governor for misallocating resources.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And good for the governor.
Yeah. A man with a chainsaw that knows how to use it is a thing of beauty.
You betcha. And a joy forever.
All the food storage in the world means nothing if your kids won't eat it. Again, I would say, hey,
tough it out.
Yeah.
If they get hungry enough, they'll eat it.
That's right.
Yeah. It's like my cat.
Anything that you depend on someone else for is not available anymore.
Okay.
Most folks don't have emergency storage. They run to Walmart, get the water, get the batteries, fill their tubs up with water. That's it. A few of them will be lucky enough to get a case of ramen and a box of Pop-Tarts. That will be your neighbor's supply.
And this is true. I was in Barstow when that 7.1 hit.
Yep.
Nothing was in those stores. We didn't even know what hit, and the stores were bare of everything.
Fathers, all the money you have ever made means nothing if you can't keep your kids warm. Mm-hmm. And mothers, everything you have ever done for your kids is forgotten if your kids are hungry. You really do not want to be the unprepared parents. The kids turn on you pretty quick. Small solar charging gadgets will keep you in touch. Both work pretty well, it seems. How many of you have decorative lights that are solar powered in your front yard, backyard?
Yeah,
we do.
Don't forget to use those when you have no power. It's like it's right there in front of you. As long as it's not overcast, you've got your light source. You can bring them in at night.
That's right.
And they'll last you at least a good 6 hours, 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Okay? Things that disappeared never to be seen again for a very long time. Fuels, matches, lighters, toilet paper, paper plates, plastic forks, milk, charcoal, anything that could be used to wire the generator to the house.
Steve, I just want you to know, I don't want to interrupt you, but I know you have
another. The state conference meeting can wait.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I'm on a new state conference overlooking some preparedness, so. You might be prepared to take care of your children and their needs, but what about when the neighborhood children start to show up at your door?
Lock it.
No. You know, the word will get out, especially with social media. It's like, hey,
Patents have
so-and-so's got,
Chris has chocolate cake.
Yep. Some people shut down in an emergency, and really there's nothing you can do about it until they actually get engaged. Right? Mm-hmm. Those will be your victims.
Go into shock.
Your town, no matter how small, is entirely dependent on outside sources of everything. If supply trucks stop rolling in due to road damage, gas shortages, or anything else, you could be without for a long time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That happened in New York.
Yep.
People were siphoning gas from cars and shooting each other.
Yep. Three fatalities.
That's why I always have locks on every one of them.
Most things don't take much power to operate, like computers, phones, radios, TVs, lights. It's those equipment that have like a heating source.
Mm-hmm. Or a
hot plate. Yep. How long can your refrigerator stay cool after you lose power?
About a day.
Yeah.
Less than 3 days.
Yeah. 48 hours is the general rule. Yeah. Okay. Your freezer will stay longer than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't open it.
When it gets dark at 4:30, the nights are really long without power.
Yes, indeed.
Getting out of the house is very important, even if it is cold. Make your home the semi-warm place to come home to, not the cold prison that you're stuck in. Someone in your family must play or learn to play guitar. Even the smallest little thing that you can get from the store should be stocked up. Spark plugs for the generator, barbecue lighter, etc. And lastly, there was a strange peace to knowing all I had to do each day was keep my family safe, warm, and fed, but my peace was someone else's panic.
One thing that you might mention, and we noticed it in Barstow, when the quake hit, gas lines broke. So you don't light a candle. You have one of those break sticks handy. Yep. Always have some of those.
Yeah. Keep in mind, if you do have a gas line break and you do smell gas at your house, and if you happen to have a gas...
Have a wrench.
Wrench.
Don't turn it off.
Don't turn it off, but you cannot turn it back on.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So once you commit to that...
You committed to it.
You committed. So that ends my two presentations. I have just a couple minutes to answer any questions or comments.
Feed your kids lots of beans, and they'll keep the house
standing, that's right.
And fragrant.
Yes.
We have a 60-gallon
container.
I change it out every
single day. Bleach. Okay, and so online there's actually the quantity of how much bleach per gallon of water.
That's an eighth of a teaspoon a gallon, I think. Quarter of a teaspoon.
Yeah, you know, let me tell you, if, it's a 50 gallon?
60.
Okay, so that's about 460 pounds because a gallon of water is 8.45 pounds. Okay, so you got to keep it to where, you know, if after the earthquake your house is livable, okay, that's great. But if you're displaced, you've got to have some portable water. So there's a company out there that makes 4.2 ounce water that's in foil packets. They're Coast Guard rated for 5 years. Okay, very small footprint in a box that you can actually take with you. They're almost like the size of the Capri Sun type of things that you. So
I've Capri Sun in my emergency.
Okay,
where do you buy that?
You can actually get it in town. You can get it online. If you go down to First Survival Gear, they have it. So,
because we got MREs.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your
thank
time.
You.
You're welcome.